Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast. I'm me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we're going to be starting our coverage of the Tanith First and Only, Ibram Gaunt, and the Sabbat Crusades. Just a lot of stuff. This is, wow, there's a lot on this. I kind of forgot about it because I read these books so long ago. Start doing research into it, like, oh.
I'm 100% using the stuff off the jacket and parts of the cast today.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's so much here.
The Sabbat worlds have been caught in chaos for 1,000 years.
The first book was 1999 or something.
Yeah, man.
All right. Wow.
No, it was, but, 40K. That is the back jacket. The synopsis for each one, when you go, what is this novel about? I always imagine the guy from the movie things telling me that every time.
Just reading that. Ugh. Real quick, 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the 400 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, comment. It helps us out a lot, and it's fun to read your comments, even when they're negative. But you don't have to do that, as always. If it's a negative comment, you don't have to.
You could.
But, you know.
You could leave pause.
Yeah, I know, but there's also a dark room in your house you can just go shout it into. And anyway,
that's
links
what,
in the show notes, as always.
What I was doing in my dark rooms of my house, I was just existing in that.
Yeah, bits of bread goes to hide from his migraines. Links in the show notes, as always. You can follow our YouTube channel where we sometimes put content up. You can also follow Brad's YouTube channel where he's a bit more consistently puts content up. You can follow our other show, The History of 40K, where we consistently put content up. That one's the History of 40K.
I'm recording two contents today for my stuff, actually.
Good call. I'm like 2.5 hours of sleep. You can also check out my other show, Retro Recall, where I'm playing video games and talking about whether or not they were fun from the 90s. And of course, if you want to support us, two good links there. One, to our merchandise. We've got t-shirts.
Stickers.
There we go, Brad. And of course, our Patreon. I like talking about Patreon because we are in a weird era of artists getting their lives ruined by AI. So Patreon's a good way to help them out. Also, we have a Patreon. Simple. $4.99 a month. You get this show and the History of 40K completely ad-free, or $7.03 Canadian, because the wildfires blacked out Brad and my sky and made me think about them some more. We're going to go to Edmonton, because Edmonton, Canada, picked it at random. Edmonton's kind of a cool place because it has the largest urban park.
So far north.
Yeah. And you know what they do? Inside really well. Giant urban park. So when it is nice outside, they can go outside, but they also have North America's largest shopping mall that has a water park, an ice rink, and a bunch of other stuff all inside, because it is cold up there for a lot of the year.
Eskimos used to dominate in the CFL.
Yeah. That is true. And then they changed the name for a reason. The Edmonton also has a weird obsession with big stuff. It's one place, if you drive past it, they've got the world's largest cowboy boot, the world's largest bat, the world's largest egg. Why? I have no idea, but they do these things. Another fun fact about Edmonton, for 70 years, rat-free. I don't know why.
It's too cold.
I guess some dude. No, they eliminated it. There was some dude just was like, I don't want rats here. And apparently they followed through on it and decided just to have no rats. I'm impressed. To be perfectly honest, I'm just impressed. That's all I can say about that. But let's get some fun parts. Edmonton has a long history of witchcraft. Since their inception, they even have a Wiccan temple there. What? This is cool. People want to know what's going on in Edmonton. They have a lot of indoor stuff and witches, and they build weirdly large stuff just to make, like, hey, we've got the world's biggest cowboy hat. But their witchcraft actually became problems over the years, because they actually put witchcraft laws on the books in Edmonton, and then they joined, you know, Canada. And the rest of Canada was like, yeah, you can't have those rules. And Edmonton went, well, we kind of want to have them. And so then they had a bit of a tiff, which I kind of enjoy. So there's that. But there's some Edmonton facts for you that I bet you guys didn't know. All right. If you want to know more, though, come on to the Discord and ask the Edmontonites, Edmontonians, Edmontons. Anyway, who are in our Discord, and they can tell you more about it.
Edmontonians. You know what? It's that forever now for me.
It should be. Yeah. If you live there, you know you want to go by that now too. I'm an Edmontonian. Oh, I like that. It sounds classy. You know, like Always Sunny, like the dressed up. But come join the Discord. Discord's awesome. A lot of great conversations in there. Fantastic place to interact. We've been having a lot of fun in it recently. It's actually, this cast came out of our Discord. People kept asking me over and over again about Gaunt's Ghost, and they were correct. It is a wonderful topic and something that actually I had a lot of fun going back through and doing a lot of research into. So thanks, guys. But also wonderful place. If you guys just like Warhammer 40K universe and want to know more about it, get in there. Really wonderful community we've built, and I couldn't be more proud of it. Awesome. But let's get into it. All right.
Hold on. I want to go to the comments and a couple of the last ones because I want to give some shout outs to people giving us some stuff. When we don't remember a movie, we have been consistently getting those movies in the comments. And I want to throw that out there for everybody.
Yeah. Oh, it's always great. People come back and like, oh, yeah, here's how
it looks. I just haven't said anything, but I look at them all the time and I'm like,
oh, no, it's
just
great.
We just had the last one. And it was Mortal Engines. And I wanted to throw that out there. There's a couple other ones that are on there. Also, we've been challenged to paintball and a couple other things. I just want to throw it out.
Oh, paintball in the Poconos? Oh, God. Yeah. I'm going to help you out. No. I don't need to lose that badly. Although, because the problem is that I'm too tall and skinny for you to hide behind, and you're too short and wide for me to hide behind. Like,
I can protect the shit out of your legs.
Yeah, we can't even use the other one as a human shield. It's like we're just useless to each other.
We haven't thrown it out there. I love looking through the comments on the cools. I sometimes look for those, to be honest with you. If I can't remember something in the cast, I love looking in the comments and seeing, well, what was the answer? Because I couldn't remember. So I appreciate it. I just want to throw it out there. Just a little.
Yeah. And honestly, to everyone realize, yes, we do read the comments and it really is fun. But let's get into this. So 41st millennia, it was busy right up until the end of it when Abaddon destroyed Cadia.
Did his 13th crusade. Well, actually continued his 13th crusade, which has been going on for 30 years now. But
but it's more like the end of it where the whole galaxy split in half.
Oh, you mean the rift where you basically Voltron the galaxy? Yeah.
Yeah. But what's interesting is that whole millennia was going hard. It all had a lot to do with those damn dirty heretics who just wouldn't stay in the Eye of Terror. Something, Corpse Emperor, something, kill them. I don't know.
And you know what? That is now the entirety of the heresy. of the Long War. Something, Corpse Emperor, whatever.
Yeah, it was about that.
Let the galaxy burn, whatever. It's no big deal.
Yeah. But basically, for a lot of this cast, just so you guys know, we're going to do some time warping because that's actually how Gaunt's Ghost is written. It's very well written, but there's a lot of jumping. And I would play the song, but I guess Spotify will immediately pull us down if I do that. So I can't. Who knew? But so we're going to start back with M35 here. So all of Gaunt's Ghost's story happens in M41, near the tail end of M41. But we have to start all the way back in M35, which not a lot is, this is minimal Imperial history at this point, in Segmentum Pacificus, which, like the Pacific Ocean, if you're in America, is to the left. So there we go.
I think you meant to say to the west in the galaxy.
No, left. So there was a world there named Hagia, H-A-G-I-A. So you guys figure out Hagia.
Hagia.
It had
like Hagia Sophia. Yeah.
Sure, Hagia. I'm sure. Did you live there? Do you know how to pronounce it? Anyway,
look, when I talk about the Imperium, I say we.
Yeah, so. I like how you said, like, yeah. Oh, like Hagia Sophia. Oh, the place you grew up. Got it. Anyway, doesn't exist anymore. It has existed for thousands of years. Got it. Following.
I could have been. You don't know that.
I do. You're barely this old. All right. This world had really no actual significance to the Imperium. It's a feudal world. It didn't really do anything of value.
Also, that's not even how you pronounce that. I know. It's Hayat. I don't know if people are going to be like, did he just incorrectly say
different? Oh, for like 11. We're like, oh, it is Sophia, though. And I know. We're not even 11 minutes into the cast, and we're 0 for 11 on pronunciation.
I was like, the one I compared it to, I also mispronounced that. I was like, as I said it, I was like, I just screwed that up. I've been looking that up. Yeah, my bad.
We're off to a great Hi-ya! Start, as always. But here's the important part. There's a world. It's out into the part of the galaxy the Imperium doesn't really like very much. On a world the Imperium doesn't care about whatsoever. And on this planet, because no one cares about it, it's got a mix of Chaos and Xeno, just warbands running all over it, and a local populace that's just hiding. On this world, a girl is born, and her name is Sabbat. Or her name becomes that. I don't really know. No one's sure of that. Because eventually she does go by Sabbat. Yeah. So, and what happens is she starts seeing visions of the Emperor at some point. Like real visions. Not like homeless person, I'm talking to myself visions. Legitimately, the Emperor is through me. And she begins to actually inspire the people around her. And this inspiration leads them to start fighting back against the powers of Chaos and the Xenos. And she, over time, rallies her entire world of however it's supposed to be pronounced against the forces, and they reclaim the world. These are feudal farmers who are fighting. I mean, they're not fighting Alpha Legion, to be fair. They're fighting other cultists.
It's still cultists. It's still magic. How about that?
Yeah. But let's also be fair. I just want to make sure people aren't like, oh, and then they defeated the Alpha Legion. No, they just defeated people who are worshiping Chaos, and Chaos probably just gave up on them partway through. We're like, nah, we tried. But after conquering Haya, Hagia, Hagia,
it's Eric. Again, if you want to do another reel, it's actually Haya. And I looked it up. I did it wrong. And then I realized that it did wrong.
I look forward to everyone correcting you.
I just listened to it. Thank you very much to make sure I got it right.
And I'm sure that person's also wrong, but we'll continue. What matters here is after conquering this world, word spreads to the region and other worlds start rallying to her cause. So she actually leaves and goes to other worlds. And this turns into a full-blown crusade into the region of Segmentum Pacificus. And colonial regiments start rising up and joining her. Pilgrim retinues, where random people start joining up saying, I want to go help this, take part.
It's a real crusade on this. It's a big...
Yeah, even like the base starts showing the brazen skulls. Ooh, the white scars make a small appearance as usual. It's a sentence, but they do appear. And over time, this crusade lasts 105 years and over 100 worlds are liberated. And she then, of course, dies because saints have to die. That's part of the rule. And they rename the entire section of worlds that she liberated, the Sabbat worlds, after her.
Which, in this part's infuriating in the history, to be honest with you. Imperium lore is sometimes really awesome and sometimes really, come on, guys. Yeah. Because they just let the worlds fall back into chaos after this insane, awesome crusade.
Yeah.
And it's not true. And it's not through getting taken. There wasn't a giant invasion. They just go... Hey, we're not paying enough attention, and Chaos slowly tighten its grip again on it, and it's kind of annoying. John, I know it's not real, but it bothers the shit out of me when you look at this and you go, this story of this crusade to take it back was so awesome, and then they're like, we didn't have enough time to make sure everybody was okay, so Chaos came back.
Yeah, I look at it a couple ways there. So first off, it does take 6,000 years for them to fall back to chaos. So it's not like it's overnight, number one. Number two, most of these worlds are feudal. And it's not like these are hive worlds that are falling back to chaos. So if you're the Imperium...
You go, hey, what's worth keeping and what's worth...
We're going to triage this a little bit. Well,
the problem is we've had over the last now 12,000 years since the Horus Heresy... You know what happens when you just let a world go and chaos comes in? It always costs way more in the end. So maybe, just maybe, don't be a douche to the places and people wouldn't fall to chaos.
There's also that. But let's jump now 6,000 years. And because in around 600 of M41, the Imperium decides to go back to it. Well, because of a certain Lord Militant Slato.
Well, now, well, let's set it up on the thing, because you do all the jackets for all the books. They have firmly been under chaos for a while now. This is, it isn't a, some people fell. It's just known.
This whole region's under chaos. Now, it's, when we say under chaos, I do want to make it clear. It's not like Eye of Terror under chaos. No. What you have is you have a bunch of worlds. They are not really causing problems for the Imperium. It's just, these are worlds that are chaos, much like there are worlds that are, you know, Tau. There are worlds that are Votan. There are worlds that are these things. If they're not actively attacking Imperial, you know,
we kind of do nothing about
transport, whatever is kind of the viewpoint. But I want to talk real quick about Crusades, because we covered this during Siege of Rax a little bit. And I want to make it clear, as fun as the game Space Marine is to play, and as fun as the, when we talk about Space Marines, they are to play, Space Marines are a teeny tiny little nothing fraction of the Imperium. They are a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of the Imperium.
Pretty cool percentage, though.
They are. But what they really do is they get involved either when their counterparts are there, as in Chaos Space Marines, or some Xenos are there. They tend to, when it's a larger conflict, they'll jump in and try to do a small bit of a conflict, sway it a little bit, and then leave.
They shock it.
That's off. Just what they do.
They break. Yeah. They're in charge of breaking the defense and then basically going, you guys finish this off.
Exactly. The Imperium fights with humans because we breed like guppies. It's just true. There's no gene seed. You just make more of them over and over and over and over again. And that's why when we talk about these conflicts, it's going to be billions of people and stories like a lot we're going to talk about here. It's going to, almost everything we're going to talk about for the next few casts are going to be human. It's going to be guard on guard on guard. A little bit of AdMech here. There's some Space Marines who appear, but it's mostly just humans. And that's because that's the overwhelming majority of what occurs in the galaxy. But that also is important because humans are going to human. And what I mean by that is, it's a dark future. There is only war.
And okay? Hold on. And war never changes.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Well, you gotta, war never changes.
You got to throw the fallout.
I know where you were going with it, but it just didn't make sense for where we're going. I appreciate the fallout. I mean, I love the fallout.
Also, yeah. It is the catchphrase for 40K. In the grim, dark future, there is only war. It's on every box.
Exactly. And then actually, and they added a new one for 11th edition, which I love, which is, this is the most violent time in the history of the galaxy. And actually, the funny thing is the time of the Sabbat Crusade was the most violent time in the history of the galaxy, only to be overtaken a couple hundred years later. Yeah. Right now, the most violent time in the history. It kind of sucks. But what's important about that is that for people who live in it, especially the Imperial military forces, there is only one thing, and that's glory. All of them want their names to be added to the annals of the Imperium. They want to be Lord Solar Macarius. They want to be Aulanius Pius. They want to be like Caiaphas Kane. Well, I think Caiaphas Kane, he keeps coming back to life. It's like, yeah. You know, I want to be Caiaphas Kane. Oh, it's actually, guys, I'm still alive.
I'm right here, guys. If you want to be me, you can drink with me tomorrow.
Yeah. Never mind.
How old are you?
Yeah, take his name off the plaque. But you know what? Save the plaque. It was a nice plaque, and it's probably going to come up again. Or Soccer Creed. There's tons of these people. And so this glory is an important piece that's going to come up a lot in the stories we're going to tell here. Now, let's talk about Lord Militant Slato. Lord Militant Slato was a super accomplished commander. He'd won a bunch of major campaigns for the Imperium, and he was about to retire. But I liked this one piece about his retirement, which is cool. It's not retire because he's a true, like, it's a true story of retirement. He's not retiring like, oh, I'm going to go live on a farm somewhere, because he knew, I'll go live on some farm and then chaos will invade it and stab me. That'll suck. He wanted to retire back to Terra to go help improve the Astra Militarum, because after over 100 years of service, he had ideas of how to make the Imperial military better.
Nice train. And that thought that he could get better recruits. He could figure people actually a little bit more seasoned before they hit the field.
Yeah. So that was his goal. But He also, earlier in his, well, his whole life, but he'd always been obsessed with Saint Sabat, because this is a man, you're not this successful unless you're a true believer. And he always thought it was amazing that this lowly farm girl got infused with the light of the emperor and then inspired millions to follow her to war and was able to reclaim an entire section of the galaxy in a way that, honestly, he didn't. And so at one point, he even wrote a strongly worded letter about how we should reclaim.
I love that you put strongly worded letter, because he effectively made a manifesto for the reclamation of the Sabbat world. And you said it's a strongly worded letter. I mean, you're not wrong. Explain to me the difference.
those are one and the same.
That's the fine.
Yeah, if you want to call it a thesis, that's fine, but it's still a strongly worded letter. He wrote, "Dear Lords of Terra."
He did this, and then he also sent a letter to Best Buy because he didn't get good service.
Yes,
same thing.
He filled out a Google review of the Imperial military.
My Bluetooth speaker had a problem.
Yeah.
These are not the same, goddammit.
There it is.
Oh, Jesus.
So as he's about to retire, the Lords of Terra decide that his strongly worded letter, there's some good points in this. And they promote him to the War Master of the Imperium in 755 of M41 in order for him to go and reclaim the Sabbat worlds. Key point here. Slato's 150 years old at this point.
Which, even in 40K, for a regular human, that's pretty bananas. Yeah,
for a non-Inquisitor, that is old. Now, as I said, we're going to time jump a little bit. So we're going to go from everything I just told you, 20-something years earlier, 30, somewhere in that room. Maybe about 30 years earlier. I don't know. Somewhere in that room.
We got to go find Gaunt of Gaunt's Ghost.
Yeah, so we're going to the world of... Manzipar, whatever. There's a child is born to the second of command of the Jantine Patricians. It's a regiment. Ibram Gaunt. And this man had the high creativity to name his son Ibram Gaunt, which is just lazy writing on the part of GW. It's so
confusing in the beginning of the story, by the way.
Yeah, it throws all of us off. Yeah, you're reading a book and it's like, guys, just why? Why? It doesn't help when you're reading a book to do this. So just for note, for anyone writing something, I have no issue with you naming your son the same thing you name you, that's right, or your daughter, if you're a woman. I don't care. But if you're writing a novel, don't do that. It's super confusing for everybody. Anyway.
Yes.
But as any good guard officer, Gaunt the senior placed his son in the capable hands of someone else to raise him, because he wasn't doing it.
And then smoke bombed out.
yeah. Peace out. And this tutor was named Benthley. Benthley raises Gaunt while his father is off to war, which went about as well as to be expected, because his father died.
Instantly.
And overwhelmed and killed by orcs on the planet Gyladus
Decimus.
Yeah. And then, as is customary with the Imperial military, with the death of his parent, Gaunt Jr. is sent to the Schola Progenium, where he'd be trained to become an officer of war. And Ibram Gaunt was a natural for the Commissar rank.
Also, what does that mean about your personality when they go, man, you are perfect for a Commissar? You're like,
oh, yeah.
Dude, what? How messed up are you in your regular life?
Rigid.
Yeah.
It means rigid.
Exactly. That's what
it
means.
This dude is disciplined. That's what it was. But he did stand out, even amongst the Commissar rank. He was known for being a very good learner, both from a studious sense of like, hey, here's a book, read it, but also tactically. He was good at understanding his surroundings. He was good at making judgment calls. He was just viewed as being highly tactical, sloppy.
Well, I would say he's improvisational while being very, very specific and detailed. Mm-hmm. So that is very few and far between. A lot of people do the letter of the law for the Imperium, but it doesn't let you get as many wins as you want because you're not able to adapt to your surroundings.
Exactly. Now, another key detail about him, which is great if you're going to be the lead character in a bunch of novels, is Gaunt is fearless, like Titus level fearless. He would have been a very good space marine. He is very firm in his commitments. He's decisive in his actions. And as you will, if you read the books, you'll discover, very comfortable with death. He's like, all right, I'm going to die now. He's just the way he is. He never, basically has no fear of dying.
In a random side, before we get really into him, because we're going to talk some cool stuff, because he's really cool. There's 15 books. Mm-hmm. If you have a chance and you're modelers and you want to paint something, his unit, the Gaunt's Ghost, is actually super cool. And it's very different in the unit. So it's like a cool unit to paint. Continue.
Yeah. But for all these reasons, he got promoted very quickly to cadet commissar. I believe he was 18 years old, maybe even younger, when he got promoted to cadet commissar. And he was sent out to join the Hircan regiment under Commissar Delane Akhtar. Now, the Hircan regiment were a new addition to the Imperial military. This is the regiment Gaunt was attached to, is one of the first six ever raised by the planet. They actually did six the first time out, and they were raw. And we actually should mention that real quick. We haven't covered Guard in a while. So if people are listening to this and they haven't listened to that, because like almost 2 years ago that we covered Guard.
Has it been
real quick? Yeah, something like that. Real quick aside, when a Guard regiment is raised, it's entirely done by the planet itself. You don't provide troops and they go somewhere else for training and then go somewhere else. This, everything's done on planet. So the planet makes them their uniforms. The planet provides them the weapons. The planet does all the training.
When you raise a regiment, there's a real chance that you're boarding a transport and you're getting off that transport and shooting at something as you walk off a transport.
So when the regiment raises up, though, the one important thing is like the first couple times you do it, your planetary defense force is basically training your regiment to go be warriors off world. So the first couple, they're kind of rough, if we're being honest. It's like baking a cake. The first couple times you do it, it might be a little bit raw in the middle. It's just true. Like, and that, but that's why Kasserkins are so valuable. That's why, you know, Cadians, this is why Kriegsmen, because they've been making troops for so long
that they've gotten
masters at it. Yeah. But if it's your first regiment you've ever made, it's like, I don't know, this is a las rifle, point it that way. They don't have as much experience. So now, how do they counter that? Commissars. The job of the commissar, because remember also, when I leave the world, I never come home. So it's not like soldiers then come back and train them. What happens is once you get out into the field, the commissars are assigned to you. And the commissar's job is to make you a better soldier. And the commissars are kind of special forces. This is something that it's changed in the lore a little bit. There was a period of time where commissars were all former scions, and then they flipped that. But you have to think of it more of what the Schola Progenium really is. The Schola Progenium is not a preppy boarding school where they're doing sailing and making fun of poor people. It is a military boarding school that transitions to special forces as the children come of age. And I want to point this out because I know their data sheets suck. Commissars can fight. Commissars can seriously fight. So we're all aware of that. Like, that's what a commissar's job is. It's to lead from the front and then execute.
And I was saying to shoot also, people in the head when they try to flee.
Yeah, but it's important. It's important. Now, due to the raw nature of the Hircan regiments, they were given this guy, Commissar General Delane Akhtar. And Ibram Gaunt was under him. And Akhtar had been a longtime veteran of a lot of engagements. And his job was to get these guys into fighting shape. But Akhtar also, because he had a lot of experience, knew how to do this. And he knew just doing it with a blind force wasn't going to work. He had to use the best parts of the Hircan to make them efficient. And what Akhtar realized is that the Hircan, because they're very much so a raw regiment, had a lot of variation in them. They would all exceed in different categories. There just wasn't a uniformity. So he would adjust their formations and their battle plans to move the soldiers to be assigned to the missions they're most adept at. The people who are best at sapping would make sure they all went on the sapping mission. The guys who are best at stealth went here, this type of thing. And Gaunt saw this. He saw this as a good way to utilize troops. It's not just the, all right, everyone over the top. It is a, let's make sure my best, most specific people go to these areas. And that is rare for a regiment, to be clear.
And also, most of the regiments that gone is learning from at this point in time, too.
Exactly. Because most of the regiments, to keep in mind, operate like World War I. That is kind of the system. He doesn't. And this is critical. So later on, the six regiments are sent to a place called Glacius Decimus to deal with an orc invasion there. The orcs had invaded from a local moon. The war boss was named Elgaz. 10 months of fighting later, they succeed. And during this campaign, Oktar took a really strong liking to Gaunt, actually calling him boy. It's a big part of the Gaunt Ghost because Gaunt hates it because he keeps calling him boy because he is a child, by the way. Gaunt is light years young for this role of cadet commissar. Even for cadet commissar, he is young. Oktar, though, saw in Gaunt something really impressive. He saw that Gaunt really had potential.
Yeah, well, one, he sees that he's fearlessly talked about it multiple times. And then he picks things up and keeps them. He's tactically sound, but he's also learns from everything they're doing.
Yeah. And so, unfortunately, though, at the end of the campaign, after the war with the orcs, the officers decide to celebrate. And they discover a rather hearty collection of wine under one of the liberated capitals and decide to have a feast. War boss Elgaz had poisoned the wine, which is something orcs do not do. This is very unorky, by the way. Very, very unorky. Bad orc.
It's not cropping at all.
No. As Commissar Oktar died, though, he brought Gaunt in and he promoted him to full commissar. And this is so easy. I mean, I keep saying Chud's like 18 years old commissar. This is a
man. He's a young man.
Yeah. And now, though, we have to dive a bit more into Gaunt himself.
We'll be right back after a quick break. Have you been sitting on an idea for a while now? Have a concept for a business, but just have not pulled the trigger yet? Welcome to us, and in this podcast, about 2 years before we started, with a bunch of, hey, we should start a podcast. And the good news is, starting a business is easier than ever now, thanks to tools out there like Shopify. With Shopify, you get all the tools you need to start a business and make it successful. You get the experience of a global commerce platform representing 10% of all e-commerce business in the U.S. alone. You get built-in tools that'll help you grow between writing product descriptions, page headlines, even advice on photography. And all of this comes with 24/7 customer support to help you with your journey. Take your passion and get your side gig going. Speaking from experience, you won't regret it. Get started today with a free trial at shopify.com/lore. With Shopify, nothing stands between your ideas and a real business. So go make one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/lore. That's start your trial today at shopify.com/lore. August is the perfect time to hit reset before the autumn rush begins. And honestly, I can't think of a better place to start than my closet. That's why I love shopping at Quince. Quince specializes in everyday staples that work harder, like their ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're versatile, timeless, and transition seamlessly from a casual workday to a dinner out. If you're still hanging on to the same worn-out basics, Quince makes it easy to upgrade. They have premium denim, tailored chinos from just $60 with the kind of perfect fit, structure, and high-quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. But everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories to cut out the middlemen so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. I can say from experience that I'm a huge fan of their comfort stretch traveler pants. I got one and then immediately ordered a second to help replace my stuffy suits I was wearing to work events. They're comfortable, they're stretchy, and I still look professional, and they've been a very welcome addition to my wardrobe, allowing me to be much more comfortable while actually looking better and more relaxed on work trips. And it's not just clothing. Quince also has hotel quality bedding and bath essentials from premium cookware and travel must-haves. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/40klore. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/40klore.
All of this stern demeanor, all of this clever, hard focus, all that stuff, there's a reason for it in Gaunt, because we have to do backwards a little bit. Being sent off to military boarding school kind of sucks.
Because it's Imperium military boarding school. Also, when you get sent off the Progenium because your family died, you don't have a lot of options for what you're doing. It's rough there.
Exactly. And let's just, unfortunately for Gaunt, early on in the campaign with the Hyrkan as cadet commissar, he led an attack on like a human separatist. It was in the world of Darandara. And this is well before the Orc campaign. And there they captured some enemies, and one of the enemies was an unsanctioned Psyker. And before executing them, because Gaunt obviously was going to do that, Gaunt interrogated. And during the interrogation, the Psyker revealed to Gaunt the true cause of his father's death. It was his uncle. And this is because the writers at GW who wrote this book also read Hamlet a bunch of times. Because this is 100% Hamlet. Like, we're not even trying, by the way, just with a happier ending. This annoys me, by the way. I realized partway through, I'm like, oh crap, this is just Hamlet. So his uncle was serving with his father at the same time. And it turns out that...
You're 100% right.
Did you just realize that too?
You said Hamlet. I said, in my mind, I said the Lion King. One might be a little bigger of a literary work than the other. Boom, I'm in top form today. My brain's working full 1,000%. Look, man, Scar might betray you.
Toledo education. There it is.
I've got him here in my room.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. I'm cracking good myself job. Up today. This is fantastic. Yeah.
All right. So the story as told to Gaunt is that Gaunt's uncle, Dercius, was about to be overrun by the orcs. So he fled as a coward and let Gaunt's father, Gaunt.
As bait. Not even just let.
Exactly.
He basically went, I don't have to run faster than the orcs. I have to run faster than you.
Exactly. And then covered it up after the fact. And so his father died because his uncle's a coward. Gaunt was able to confirm this, but there's a catch to this.
Yeah, because he's not after the battle. Dercius isn't exactly some guy.
Yeah, he is General Dercius now. And so cadet commissar can't really do much about general. However, Commissar Gaunt can. So jump to the forward again. Now we're on the world of Ked 1173. Gaunt is there. General Dercius is there. Gaunt's like, I don't know. If I remember correctly, I think it was a convoy, meets up with his uncle's convoy and does a little, hey, let's have a quick chat. And his uncle with his Jantine patricians get out. And his uncle doesn't really know what's going on. Gaunt then confronts his uncle about being a coward and dereliction of duty. And effectively, it is the job of every member of the Imperial military to die in service for the Empire.
Held out in the primer.
It's very clear.
You've got the best gear and the best tech in the galaxy.
The primer does not say your job is to run away in cowardice in service to the Emperor. That's not in there. I've read it. I've read the primer a few times. Not in there. Now, Gaunt does get a little bit lucky here. Rather than his uncle protesting his innocence, his uncle just decides, I'm just going to kill you.
And which was pretty good for him, because he could have just went, no, and just walked away.
And then had his men kill Gaunt and his retinue, and that would have been that. But because he did that, we now get a dead ripoff of Princess Bride. Straight up. This is the only thing Gaunt didn't say was, My name is Ibram Gaunt.
You killed my father. Prepare to die.
It is outside of that. They have a duel. They go back and forth. His uncle wounds him almost mortally, but he powers through because he is so obsessed with avenging his father's death and eventually kills him.
Hmm.
I've seen Princess Bride way more times than I've read the Gaunt Ghost books. I know my Princess Bride very well. Anyway. Kills his uncle, and a couple things occur here. So one good, one bad. The good one is he has avenged his father. The bad one, which Gaunt doesn't realize, is he dooms his in-laws.
Because they are now traitors to the Emperor.
Yes, because General Dercius now has been, he died in an honor duel to a commissar. That means he is legally guilty. And because he's legally guilty, that means of dereliction of duty, that means every promotion that he's ever had now is, not only is it null and void, but he should have been executed back in the, a while ago. So all nobility titles are removed. So every single member of the entire family has now lost their nobility, all their housing, all their stipends, everything. And he has a second cousin named Flens who doesn't really care for this, and they're going to come back later. But now, back to the Sabbat Crusade. The onset of this crusade is the standard tactical fortitude of all crusades. On the count of three, get them. Basically it.
Yeah, that is true.
Slato realizes the forces of chaos within the Sabbat worlds are disjointed, but are very numerous. And effectively, it's going to hornet's nest. Once we start this, this is going to spiral up quick. So he has to get in there, establish a foothold in the region that he can reinforce and protect that said foothold, because it's going to get assaulted quick. So he gets 6 billion guardsmen, 6 chapters of Space Marine, Admech, who brings the Titans. Yeah. And picks 4 planets. Formal Prime, which is much classier than Casual Prime.
Okay. I, by the way, when I read the show notes, I knew that you couldn't help yourself being that cheesy. So I just accepted that it was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We also have Onscard, Long Haliant, because Short Haliant, that's why bother with Short Haliant. And then Indrid. Hmm. This and Ted, that's what it felt like. It takes a year, but the worlds are conquered and a foothold is secured. But during this time, Slato held a secret meeting and he brings 48 officers into the meeting. And one of them is Commissar Ibram Gaunt. Slato confesses to all of these officers that he realizes he's going to die before this crusade finishes. He dude's 155 years old, by that, at this point. And he asks all the officers to swear a blood oath to him that they will see this crusade through. Because he knows when I die, whoever takes over might just go, this thing's stupid. I'm out.
The thing is, that's one of the things about him being around for so long in the military from the beginning of his life all the way to now.
Yeah.
Is he's seen the Imperium do this over and over again. When you lose someone that was in charge of some pushing forward, someone else thinks that another sector is way more important, whatever, and they just bail on things kind of a lot.
Yeah. And so he's obsessed with this happening, and all 48 do it, including Gaunt. The next phase of the campaign is a lot harder. The worlds that Slato picked for the foothold work, but they weren't as heavily defended. And now he has to strike into the heart of the region, because the main force within the Sabbat worlds is a world called Balhaut. And then the main leader is, this can confuse some of you, he's an Archon, but not Drukhari. This is just a term. It's title. A chaos term. Yeah. Named Nadzibar. Listen. Nadzibar? Can I call him Nadzibar?
Yes.
100%. Let's go Nadzibar. All right, so Nadzibar is a chaos being. They call him that being, not man, just being. And he's the one who'd actually conquered the worlds 6,000 years earlier. So Chaos, big fan of Nadzibar.
Because of the name, and, of course.
Yeah, Nadzibar. You have to love Nadzibar.
Chaos loves me some Nadzibar.
And the campaign now is in full swing. Now you have to spread out and start just picking up the worlds and start fighting towards this central world. And the good news is, at first, it goes pretty well, because the thing about chaos is when the going gets tough, the chaos gets going, as in retreat. They really don't like a hard fight. It's not worth it because the gods of chaos won't really give you a lot of stuff unless you're winning. But Archon Nadzi Bear eventually gets upset and he gets involved and launches a counterattack into the Imperium. And there's a whole long battle, blah, blah, blah. We're here to talk about Gaunt, so we don't have to get that far into this. Eventually, Slato and the forces are successful and they get to the world of Balhaut. This is going to be the pivotal battle. And when they first arrive on Balhaut, it does not go great.
Doesn't go great.
I kind of get a kick out of this. I get a kick out of it. So Slato deploys down and his main commander lands. And within 10 days, that guy dies. That's like 2 days, he dies. And then the next two people who take over die within 10 hours each. So that goes great. It's not until a new commander, so basically the fourth in charge, named Makaroth.
Womaster Makaroth.
Makaroth takes over, and Makaroth does right the ship. And I bring him up because he's going to come up a lot in our next few casts. But Makaroth is the first one to actually show great success there.
It is the focal point of the novel as far as why things are happening.
Exactly. So Makaroth, and this is why Makaroth, Makaroth later is going to get promoted to the new War Master. So we have that.
My bad.
Yeah. Now, that being said, the final chaos position, though, it needs to be taken not by an Astartes chapter, but by a guard regiment. And I should also mention Slato himself, though, went down. Slato decided, I can see where the largest and heaviest defenses are. I'm doing this. And he took his own troops down there basically to go fight into Nadzi Bear. Oh, the White Scars were there too. Yay, White Scars made an appearance. They do exist. And the Silver Guard. Yay. But the important part is, as Slato is trying to get into Nadzi Bear's main complex, there's a giant wall they can't break through until a breach is done. And the breach is done by the Hyrkan 8th with Commissar Gaunt as their commissar. And it's through this breach that Slato rushes with the support of the Hyrkan 8th and Gaunt. Slato and Nadzi Bear fight. Slato is mortally wounded. He's 155 years old. But he does kill Nadzi Bear.
By the way, he has to be bummed at that. I've been along so bad. His old guy killed me. Come on, man.
Well, Nadzi Bear is also 6,000. So, I mean, but I'm expecting to get railed for calling him Nadzi.
100%.
Yeah, it's going to be just going to be railed for this, but I'm still doing it.
I mean, I started the cast off with mispronouncing a wonder of the world. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's fine. All right. But Slato's taken back to the infirmary where they realize these wounds are fatal. He's not going to make it. And he does this weird thing. He calls for Gaunt by name and brings Gaunt in. There's no explanation for this. My opinion is that he had a vision of the Emperor. And that's why he does this. Because there's no good reason for him to do any of this, if I'm being honest. But he brings Gaunt in and he does two things back to back that are completely like uncalled for. And when I say uncalled for, no one does this. He promotes Gaunt to Colonel Commissar. And I'll explain why it's a big deal in a second.
Which is kind of a made-up title, but continue.
Yeah, and we'll explain why in a second. And then he pledges him a right of settlement. So these are just back-to-back. And then he dies. And then he elevates Makaroth to be the new... And then he dies. So I'm going to talk about what he did, though, because this is big. So first off, Colonel Commissar. There are no other Colonel Commissars in the galaxy. It's written down in Imperial lore that there may have been some others, but it's a maybe. And that's because it doesn't make sense. A colonel is meant to lead troops. That's what they do. They are an officer of the military. They're a political appointee. A commissar, their job is to make sure the officers and the troops stay in line.
They're propaganda masters that lead.
Well, that's a negative way of looking at it, isn't it? Jesus.
They give you propaganda. If you don't like the propaganda, they shoot you.
Well, there is that. Yeah. I mean, there is that part. But in effect, the problem is that these two titles actually conflict with each other because military officers and commissars operate in different worlds. It's not like in the Space Marines where the chaplains and the captains actually interact. These ones don't really technically like each other. We look at the Imperial Guard, because if I'm an Imperial Guard, say, general, as we discussed a short while earlier, a commissar might ram me through with a chainsword. Not really want to hang around them a lot when that's a potential thing. But now Gaunt is his own. Now, it is, to be fair, Gaunt is basically perfect. So he can do this. This man has no moral failings. Gaunt, the truth is, I'm just going to say it now, Gaunt will be sainted if they keep writing him the way he is. They're setting him up to be sainted. And that's, if you read the books, you can kind of see it that way. This is kind of the origin story of a saint. So there you go. Because he is meant to be perfect with no moral failings. Part two of what he did, though, is even crazier. So Gaunt is going to be given, as a colonel, command of a regiment, or actually regiments, plural. We covered this back when we did Guard. If a regiment does really well, they will be given the right to retire. And when they retire, they are given the right to settle a planet that they conquered. None of them do this. They all just die, by the way. But in theory, this will happen.
Yeah.
Slato pre-granted this to Gaunt. So technically, Gaunt gets a regiment, and the first world they conquer, they get to just keep. That's a sweet deal. And he's about to get a regiment. So let's talk about Tanith.
The first and only?
AKA Endor.
With no Ewoks.
Yeah, so it's a better Endor. Ewoks were stupid.
Yes.
It's okay.
Teddy Ruxpin shouldn't be taking out AT-STs.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, so Endor. It's a forest planet, but it's got a weird history. But it's kind of a fun, weird history. So recent Imperial history, super loyal. They haven't missed a tithe payment in like 1,000 years, something like that.
It's a tithe is wood, man. What is the point of this?
I don't know. This
they don't even say what they do with it.
I cannot figure out what they do with wood. I can, because you know what? We both have played Rogue Trader. So these guys give you the wood so they can build the organs inside the ships that don't really matter.
Yeah, that's true. There you go.
Yeah, that's what it is. The
100-foot-tall monster organs with candles all over them. Yes, got it.
Yeah, that's what it's for. All right. But the true history of Tanith is one of rebellion. This matters a lot. Tanith was originally settled by people from Northern Europe, which sounds weird. Let me finish. So the Imperium would find worlds, you know, by rogue traders, and then they would send colony ships to those areas. The ships would be loaded with people, obviously, and they would do them largely from the same regions. It's just easier to settle a planet with people of a common ancestry. The settlers on Tanith, though, eventually rebelled against the Imperium. Why? Because they came from an area that didn't really care for the Emperor that much, if we're being honest. And when this rebellion happened, it turned into a pretty brutal feudal state. Lords, kings, all that stuff. Later, though, a group of people called Wood Warriors, I'm not making that up, that's what GW wrote, Wood Warriors, armed with knives, overthrew the lords and turned Tanith into a democracy. Which, funny note, the Imperium would actually prefer the first system of government over the second one.
Yeah, true.
For the calling it out. Yeah, just calling it out, like, actually, we prefer the king.
Be more efficient.
Yeah, we prefer the king thing. We're not big into this votey thing. No. But anyway, Tanith is a democracy. Good luck with that. Now, Tanith, though, is still a forest world, and thus it has a very small population. So they're about to have their first ever regiment. And Tanith's going to raise 3 regiment, the Tanith first, second, and third. And Gaunt is being sent there to be their leader. And he was super excited about this trip until he stepped off the landing craft and saw his regiment.
Not super excited that the
free
folk of Tanith are there. Gaunt's kind of a stickler for order. If you're doing his alignment is lawful, don't worry about it. It's just lawful.
Yeah. The people of Tanith are the true forest folk. They're druids. That's what these are. These are meant to be druids. They are heavily tattooed, but they're tattooed like spiritual meanings. They're not like chaos spiritual meanings. They have like
they're
star systems.
Freaking
like
hippies, dude. Trees. Come on.
Well, but they're not hippies, though. That's why I say druids, because fine. We both play D&D.
I'll give them the druid. They had a bunch of the free spirit people, though. That
they do, but they still also hide in trees with knives. And so I'm like,
they were way cooler than that because they were very competent.
Yeah. The hippie thing definitely is they not giving their kid a name till they're 8 years old. Let the kid name themselves. That one's hippie.
Yes. That's literally where I was going with this. I'm like,
full stop. Yeah. Like, yes.
Settle down, moonbeam.
Yeah. Also, like, teaching kinder. That's, by the way, later than kindergarten starts. So you're a kindergarten teacher and none of the children have names. That would have been fun. All right. But the part that actually matters about the people of Tanith is they're very, very sneaky. They are masters of stealth. Like they're better than Raven Guard pre-gene seed stealth. They have camo cloaks and they can just basically disappear from view to anything that's not mechanical. And they're kind of good at scouting and infiltration. And that's going to come up a lot in basically all of their stories. That's their main thing. But there are some negatives to this. And as forest folk,
you guys have to read it. I cannot stress these books are very, very fun to read because they do make a big deal about the fact that Gaunt has been his entire life. He's effectively been an officer of the Imperium and he shows up and this guy has been the strictest of anybody. And
he was polishing his boot on the craft down and he walks off to see his regiment and like people have, oh my God. So
they take their uniforms, they cut the sleeves off. They made them shorts. Yeah. They've got, everything.
Jorts.
Yeah.
Let's call it half jorts.
Yeah.
Some guys were barefoot because they were like, I like the boot. They converted the boots into like, Birkenstocks. They've converted weapons. There's equipment just dumped all over the ground because the backpack was too heavy. They're doing all of this stuff. I would say glorified militia, but that's giving it too much quality. Gaunt is just looking at this going, guys have full beards, like tattoos on their faces. And he's just looking around going, absolutely not. And he's basically getting ready to just start shooting and whipping is his plan. But there's another key piece we didn't talk about. Tanith is in the Sabaot world cluster. It never went to chaos, but it is there. And that's why kind of convenient Gaunt was in Sabaot and then just shot over there to pick up his regiment. Okay. Very convenient because you're very close to the crusade to pick up more troops. Unfortunately, you're also very close to the crusade and the Imperial forces are focused elsewhere. At the fall of Balhaut, the chaos forces in the sector scattered as you normally would when your Archon dies. The Imperial Navy initially set up a blockade to corral all the fleeing forces and kill them all. New War Master Makaroth had a better idea, though. His idea was, why should we sit there and let chaos attack our blockade? Let's go hunt them down. They're already in the back foot. We can kill a ton of them this way. Let's let them get organized. So he turns the blockade into an attack. In doing this, a small chaos fleet snuck through, probably actually more than one did, but one of them matters for this story. And this fleet wasn't super into the Imperium at this point and begins looking for asses to kick. Well, actually not really. It's looking for punching down.
I was just saying, they weren't looking for asses to kick. They were looking for, I'm going to burn your house down because you did kick my ass.
Yeah. So as Gaunt is getting ready to murder his own regiment, basically out of anger, an orbital bombardment begins because the chaos forces weren't looking to invade and conquer. They were there to exterminate us.
They're looking to spite. They're looking for is spite.
Exactly. And Gaunt immediately realizes this planet is lost. But he's not willing to lose a valuable asset for the Imperium. So he begins coordinating an evacuation of the regiments. Note the regiment, not the civilians.
Whoa,
the regiment. No. One civilian.
There you go.
But it's not because he was trying to evacuate him. For the record, read the novel. Milo does not get out because he was like, oh, I should save a civilian. Milo saves Gaunt, and as a result, he gets out. But this is also one of the early glimpses into Gaunt's kind of bravery. I like the Titus reference because we now have Titus as a character. Gaunt was the last person to leave Tanith. He sat there. He basically expected to die on Tanith, effectively, and saying, yeah, but I'm going to get all these regiments out, and these regiments are going to fight chaos. And it wasn't until this civilian, Bryn Milo, was basically a child, saved him, and he was able to get him onto a transport that they left. The Chaos Fleet did actually sack 5 more worlds before the Imperial Navy killed them. But they do get back, and they, you know, remuster with 3,500 guardsmen, which is nothing, by the way. That's it. Then they are renamed, because instead of the Tanith First, Second, and Third, they become the Tanith First and Only.
That's right. I love this. I mean, it sucks for them, but the name is cool. They're Tanith First and Only.
Yeah. Now, I will say,
later to be called Gaunt's Ghost.
Yeah. By the way, the regiment, not huge fans of Gaunt right now.
Pretty much they also blame him 100% that this happened, even though, not exactly his fault, but
there's a lot of screw that guy, let's stab him. That's kind of going around. Now, that being said, they still get deployed immediately because the Imperium couldn't care less that their world was destroyed, like at all.
You mean it's a Tuesday? Got it.
Yeah, neat. Let's go. And so they get sent to this world of Black Shard, and Gaunt is given the task of assaulting a fortified chaos position, because of course it is. This is a suicide mission, by the way. He is a regiment of 3,500, and he's told to go assault a fortified chaos position. They don't have the discipline for this. They're not armed for this. There's no chance. But this is the first time.
They're so sneaky, Gaunt though.
This is when Gaunt discovers how stealthy these people are. He's even Gaunt had no idea. And he actually observes, he can't see them. The Tanith will literally disappear from his view. And he's never seen anyone do this. And they're able to scout the fortification, basically walking up to it in effect. And they find some access points under the walls. So Gaunt goes, we'll just go in there and see what happens. And so they go into this and they fight their way through. And it's kind of a fun story. Again, a spoiler alert, but that's the whole, these entire casts deal with it.
I was just going to say, we're going to get pretty spoilery because we're talking about a bunch of books.
Yeah. And I love this story so much because it's a whole chaos fortress. Again, cultists, not space marines. And they find this relic there and just go, that thing looks important. Let's blow it up. So they do. And by blowing it up, it severs the connection all the cultists have to the dark gods, which sends them all into a tailspin. And then the whole complex kills themselves. And Gaunt, who was sent on a suicide mission, just conquered the entire fortress. Yay!
With basically almost no casualties.
Yeah, two guys.
Yeah.
And the other regiments are not thrilled. So this is where he does get the name Gaunt's Ghosts, because they actually name it. They name themselves that. They refer to themselves as Gaunt's Ghosts because that they operate like ghosts. Well, no one can see.
I love the fact that they just thought everyone could do this, and they kind of talk a little bit of shit about it because
it is.
They're funny, just like, why you guys can't do this? Like, basically, why do you guys suck so bad?
Because it's the funniest part, because the Tanith had never obviously left Tanith. This is just what they do. They just sit still and they're able to blend into their surroundings. Every human being they'd ever interacted with could do this, and now they're on battlefields watching other people not do that. Go, oh. Well, that's kind of weird.
They're way more not. Yeah. They belittle them quite a bit on that.
Later, it's the early stages is more than neat. The later stages, they get a little shit.
They get real.
Part of this is they also were, they do believe in like spirits. And there is a potential. We've talked about a lot before. Look, the warp exists.
Yeah.
It is quite possible that they do have, and not possible, it is.
Yes.
There are entities who protect the Tanith, and it does help them do this, much like we had with Korax. Korax was not hiding from sight because he was pulling the Metal Gear Solid. You know, there was warp powers actually obscuring him from sight. All right. Now, the last thing we need to talk about, because it's going to come up a lot more going forward, because it's a key part of the Gaunt Ghost stories, is the drama that is guard regiments.
Which is crazy, because these guys, a lot of times, just hate. Sometimes they're competing. Other times they hate each other.
Yes. And there are a lot of grudges spread throughout all the guard regiments. And they usually start off as minor things. A guard regiment uses like political power. Like what just happened here? They'll use political power to make another guard regiment do the suicide charge.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Because you don't want to take away your own power too, because you could lose men and it stops you from being the most powerful regiment around.
Yeah. And then one of two things happens. Either that regiment does a suicide charge, survives, and wants vengeance on you, or they succeed and get the glory that now you didn't get, and now you're mad at them, which is what obviously happened with the Tanith here. Other times, it's just a basic honor thing where one regiment accuses another regiment of cowardice, or maybe you kill another regiment's, you know, father. I don't know. These things come up. This happens. But all this, like, there's just constant death and killing and political action. And all of it just eventually culminates into a lot of guard-on-guard violence. That is technically legal because the Imperium is left in a tough boat here. They just have to turn a blind eye to it. If you have two regiments that want to fight each other, you would have to commit three regiments to stop them. So why bother? Breed like guppies.
Yeah.
We'll just make more regiments. That's the overall kind of the thought process. So this comes up a lot, and you're going to see this over and over again in the stories with Gaunt, because Gaunt and the ghosts are going to piss off a lot of regiments, just the way that they are. And those regiments are going to want vengeance. And it usually is because, like what just happened there, we just talked about, Gaunt will pull off stuff no one else can. And he will get promotions ahead of other people that no one else can get. And then those people
hit his regiment also
in the back.
And not only did they do these things, but also Gaunt's ghost talks a wild amount of shit. These guys should be on one of the shows where they're, you know, yelling back and forth, smashing burns on each other. You're like, holy shit.
It is genuinely fantastic. But anyway. I just want to set that up because we're going to get much more hot and heavy into that next week. Today's cast was more trying to set up the Gaunt's Ghost, give you guys a bit of a background first about the Sabbat Wars and like the background of where they are situated, because all of the Gaunt's Ghost exist in this region, but also give background of Tanith and those areas. Next ones, we're just diving a bit more into them. Again, these novels are 25 years old, so spoiler alert, but like I'm also going to spoil Heat. You should have seen it by now. It's on you.
I watched that semi recently. Love it.
But next week, we're jumping more into the journey of them as they proceed to the Sabbat Crusade and some of Gaunt's like seemingly supernatural predestiny within the Crusade. There are stuff he does that just saves humanity from evil and really from itself quite a bit.
First book starts it off hard.
Yeah, the first book's got some cool reveals in it. Sorry in advance, but again, 27 years old. Still then.
Also, he sees dead people.
Yeah. John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.